Wednesday night on Radio 3 Live in Concert from 7:30.
And that's here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's just after 1 o'clock. This is Jill Anderson with a summary of the news. 59 people are now known to have died in an attack on a shopping centre in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Police and security forces are involved in a standoff with Islamist gunmen who are still holding a number of hostages. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it is behind the attack and will strike again unless the country withdraws its troops from Somalia. Among the dead are a Canadian diplomat, two French nationals and a well-known Ghanaian poet, Kofi Awunor. At least 60 people have been killed and 100 wounded in a suicide bombing outside a church in the Pakistani city of Peshawar. A BBC correspondent says there were two explosions as up to 600 worshippers were leaving the church. The Labour leader Ed Miliband has said a Labour government would introduce policies to crack down on immigration and reduce the number of low-skilled migrants coming to Britain. He said that as part of the approach, large companies would have to train local apprentices if they recruited workers from outside the European Union. One of China's most powerful and popular politicians, Bao Xilai, has been sentenced to life in prison after being found guilty of bribery, abuse of power and corruption. Some of the charges relate to the attempted cover-up of the murder by his wife of the British businessman Neil Haywood. The number of NHS Foundation trusts in England which missed targets on accident and emergency waiting times has doubled since last year. A survey by the health regulator Monitor found that in the 3 months to June, almost 40% failed to see all their patients within 4 hours. Voting is underway in Germany's general election. The Chancellor, Angela Merkel, is expected to win a third term, but may be forced to govern in coalition with her main rivals, the centre-left Social Democrats. And the weather. Warm sunshine will develop in many central and eastern areas, as well as Northern Ireland. Temperatures could reach 22 Celsius in London, 20 in Belfast and 18 in Edinburgh. And that's the BBC News and Weather. Well, now it's time for the early music show, which is part of our Sound of Cinema season. It's presented by Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. If, like me, you enjoy a bit of celebrity gossip, you'll have probably noticed that the larger-than-life French actor Gérard Depardieu has been in the news quite a bit recently, although not always for his acting. His hulky but hugely attractive presence has graced lots of movies over the years, from his native France to Hollywood. But I wonder if any of you recall the particularly atmospheric film Tous les matins du monde, released in 1991, where he played the 17th century French musician Marin Marais. It was an extraordinarily poignant film which traced the relationship between Marais and his somewhat dour teacher, Monsieur de Sainte-Colombe. And unusually, alongside its modern soundtrack, it featured real early music, original pieces composed by both Marais and Sainte-Colombe, performed by one of today's most celebrated viol players, Jordi Savall, with his ensemble. Just how much the contrasting characters of master and pupil and the interweaving of their lives, as portrayed in the film, were based on reality, we can't be sure. The solitary and slightly mysterious Sainte-Colombe and the more gregarious Marais. But both were extremely accomplished players of the viola da gamba, who've left us with some beautiful compositions. And in today's programme, we'll be exploring a bit more about them and hearing some of the music from the film. One thing the film manages to do brilliantly is to capture the noble, almost devotional pursuit of music, and in particular that of the viol, an instrument that features prominently in Marais' most famous work, Sonnerie de Sainte-Geneviève de Mont de Paris. In fact, this is the piece that opens the film in a flash forward as Marais, now an old man, at the peak of his success at the royal court and acclaimed throughout France and beyond, reflects with some emotion on his early life. "I had a master," he murmurs to himself. "He had austerity, he had rage, and the shadows took him away." le Concert des Nations with Sonnerie de Sainte-Geneviève de Mont de Paris, which in its repeated bass line portrays the pealing of church bells. It's arguably the best known work by the French musician Marin Marais, and it opens the 1991 film about his life, Tous les matins du monde, which we're exploring today. At the heart of the film is the inner struggle, you could say, between worldly success, which Marais eventually attains, and the rejection of it, personified by his teacher, the reclusive Sainte-Colombe. Not that we know very much about Sainte-Colombe. In fact, only a handful of references exist. A 1650s document names an Augustin d'Autrecourt, also known as Sainte-Colombe, as viol teacher to a community of nuns in Lyon. And around the same period, what appears to be his signature witnesses the marriage contract of an organist. His name also appears amongst those present at a performance of a court opera by Lully. And in 1701, Marais published his Tombeau de Monsieur Sainte-Colombe as a tribute on the death of his old music master. We also have some information, though, from the pen of the 18th century writer Evard Titon du Tillet. He published a large number of anecdotes on various French musicians of the time and tells us how Sainte-Colombe was a most famous and revered player of the viol, and how he and his two daughters gave concerts in their home. Indeed, the two young girls feature prominently in the film. Sainte-Colombe was left to raise them alone following the death of his wife, and in several moving episodes she appears before him, ghost-like, haunting and encouraging him as he evokes her memory as he plays the viol. In one very affecting scene, one morning after dreaming of her, he picks up his instrument to play Le Tombeau, or Tombstone, des Regrets, the work he composed just after she had died. Solemnly, he draws his bow across the strings, and when he reaches the central section of the work, entitled Les Pleurs, tears stream down his face.
Thank you.
Le Tombeau des Regrets by the 17th century composer and viol player Sainte-Colombe. Hilla Pearl and Lorenz Duftschmidt on the viol de gamba, the lutenist Lee Santana and harpist Andrew Lawrence King. The film suggests that work's plaintive central movement, entitled Tears, could have been written for the memory of Sainte-Colombe's departed wife. A tombeau in this period was a favourite form of testament to a composer's friends or relatives or objects of their admiration. And later on we'll hear one by Marais that he wrote to commemorate the death of Sainte-Colombe, which shows his deep respect for the older master. Mind you, in the film at least, this feeling doesn't appear to have been reciprocated. Sainte-Colombe is portrayed as a recluse, harsh on his children and removing himself almost entirely from the world in a specially erected wooden cabin in his garden, where, hour upon hour, he seeks solace in playing his beloved viol. Into all this comes the young Marais, played incidentally by Depardieu's son Guillaume, who visits the Sainte-Colombe household seeking tuition. But the older composer never really takes to him, thinking him superficial and too prone to composing mere trifles.
Thank you.
Le Badinage by Marin Marais, performed on the bass viol by Jordi Savall with lutenist Rolf Lieslevant. It's just one of the original pieces that feature in the film about Marais' life, Tous les matins du monde, which we're exploring today. And it's the sort of music that Marais' teacher and mentor, the serious-minded Saint-Colombe of the film, would have found appallingly shallow. It's certainly true that what little remains of Saint-Colombe's music is often extremely sombre. His pieces were only rediscovered in 1966 amongst the papers of the celebrated pianist Alfred Cortot. And 10 years later, the Spanish viol player Jordi Savall recorded them, producing a CD which in turn inspired the writer Pascal Quinard and director Alain Corneau to make the film. And yet amongst these deeply reflective pieces, we also find livelier works, such as this concerto for two viols, subtitled Bourrasque. Here it is, performed by Wieland Kuijken and Jordi Savall. Jordi Savall and Wieland Kuijken with Burrasque for Two Viols, an unexpectedly light-hearted series of dance movements by the more usually humourless Sainte-Colombe, who, along with Marais, is portrayed in the film Tous les matins du monde, which we're exploring today. Sainte-Colombe's extreme otherworldliness and rejection of society pervades much of the film. He never published any of his own music. In fact, at first he denies ever having composed any at all. And later, when he does admit to some compositions, he expresses desire for them to die with him. The viol player Jean Rousseau, also a one-time pupil of Sainte-Colombe, noted how his teacher had brought the art of the viol to perfection, and that his playing was so natural and true that it could imitate the human voice from the sigh of a young woman to the cry of an old man. Nevertheless, the film makes much of Sainte-Colombe's refusal to become one of the king's royal musicians. "My court is the willows and the cherry blossom. My friends are memories," is his response to the royal messenger, adding, "I belong only to myself." All this is in sharp contrast to Marin Marais, who, after some 3 years of study with Sainte-Colombe, joined the opera orchestra in Paris under the infamous Lully. And in a short, spectacularly gaudy scene filmed in Versailles, we see and hear Lully's Marche pour la Cérémonie des Tours, performed by the powdered, costumed and bewigged court orchestra, conducted by Marais, who beats time with a long stick. Marche pour la Cérémonie des Tours by Marin Marais. Le Concert des Nations, directed by Jordi Savall. Under Lully's guidance, Marais soon began to compose himself. In 1686, he published his first collection of music for the viol. He also wrote motets, but it was instrumental music and music for the theatre that really attracted him, and his four surviving operas for the Paris stage were in the Lully tradition, very French, full of dramatic musical effects and demanding great virtuosity from both singers and players. As for his own performing, Marais was considered a viol virtuoso, one of the first French instrumentalists to make his mark as a soloist, in fact. He was said to have a pleasing tone and to always put musicality before technical hijinks. Some said his playing was full of fire, others that he played like an angel. Earlier on, we heard the tombeau that, according to the film, Sainte-Colombe wrote for his dead wife. Marais also composed such pieces, one to Lully, one to his son, and the one we're going to hear now, dedicated to his old and much revered teacher.
Thank you.
Philippe Pielot on the viol and the Richard Carr consort with Le Tombeau de Sainte Colombe, written by Marin Marais in 1701 in honour of his teacher's death. Watching the film, one feels great sympathy for poor Gérard Depardieu. As Marin Marais, he tries so hard to win the approval of his beloved master, but it's as if they belong to quite different worlds. Not, though, when it comes to one of Saint-Colombe's pretty daughters. Strictly raised and deprived of warmth, she arouses young Marais' interest. They begin an affair, and as she sleeps, he composes a beautiful piece for solo viol, The Dreaming Girl. Right at the end of the film, Marais, now a distinguished and much acclaimed royal composer, returns to see his old master. The daughter has died, and with great trepidation, Marais slowly walks through the garden to the little wooden cabin in the hope of finding his mentor. In the dimmest candlelight, they now talk as never before. "So you've discovered that music is not so fit for the king," says the master knowingly. "Is it for our ears, then?" asks Marais. "No." "Is it for gold? Is it perhaps for love?" asks Marais again. Saint-Colombe now sees that his old pupil is ready. He hands him his precious and secret book of compositions, and they play together. Music is what connects them, not words. And then, after so many years of coldness, Saint-Colombe finally asks Marais to play for him, the work inspired by his daughter, La Rêveuse. And so the film ends. The two elder statesmen of the bass viol have found common ground after all and are finally united in music.
Thank you.
La Reverse by Marin Marais, played by the viol player Jordi Savall with the keyboard player Pierre Antailly and Rolf Lieslevan playing theorbo. That edition of Early Music Show was presented by Lucy Skeeping, and the producer in Salford was Paul Frankel. The programme was first broadcast earlier this year. You can download that programme from the Radio 3 website.
Some of the greatest music to have graced the big screen. The sound of cinema season on BBC Radio 3. For more about the season and other BBC stations taking part, and to explore a growing archive of exclusive interviews with some of film music's greatest names, go to bbc.co.uk/soundofcinema.
Looking ahead to 4 o'clock this afternoon, there's another chance to hear Wednesday's choral evensong service from Hereford Cathedral, with music by Herbert Sumption, Brahms and Dvorak. And that's at 4 o'clock here on Radio 3. But now it's time for the Sunday concert, which was recorded recently in Salford. It's presented by Stuart Flinders.
Hello and welcome to Media City. Many members of our audience have arrived here on Manchester's Metrolink system. There's a tram stop right outside our studio here. It was on a tram car that Carl Nielsen was suddenly struck with the idea for the third movement, what he called the heartbeat of his third symphony. Apparently, he sketched the idea on his shirt cuff. The symphony's the climax of our concert, but we'll be taking the scenic route to get there. We'll be in the Highlands with another Danish composer, Niels Gaither. Delius takes us on a walk to the Paradise Garden, and with music inspired by Prospero's mythical island in The Tempest. Sorcery on the cello today from Leonard Elschenbroich, one of our BBC New Generation artists. He'll be performing Kabalevsky's Second Concerto. In charge of proceedings, the BBC Philharmonic's principal guest conductor, Jon Storgotsch. He completed his first full season with the orchestra in June with a Sibelius symphony cycle at Manchester's Bridgewater Hall, and he starts his second here with more music from his fellow Finn. Sibelius had a soft spot for Shakespeare. He'd talked about a Macbeth symphony and composed two songs for a production of Twelfth Night. But in 1925, late in his composing life, he took on The Tempest, incidental music for a lavish production at Copenhagen's Royal Theatre. He later fashioned some of the numbers from his score as a prelude and two concert suites. The prelude, which we're going to hear now, is a scene setter, a vivid piece of storm music that precedes the shipwreck with which the play itself opens. Well, here to whip the BBC Philharmonic into a fury for Sibelius's prelude to The Tempest is Jon Storgotsch. The prelude from The Tempest by Sibelius, performed by the BBC Philharmonic under Jon Storgårds. The verdict of one of the critics after that piece was first performed: Shakespeare and Sibelius, these two geniuses, have found each other. Well, there's a Shakespearean link in the next piece in our concert from Media City in Salford. Delius's opera A Village, Romeo and Juliet is based on the Bard's tragedy, but as retold by a 19th century Swiss writer, Gottfried Keller's Romeo and Juliet live in the shadows of Switzerland's mountains, the children of two families feuding over a piece of farmland. But their lives end just as unhappily as they do in Shakespeare's version. Zali and Frenchen, as they're known in Keller's story, board a river barge and sink it. Delius finished the opera in 1901. It was first performed in Berlin in 1907, and that's when it became apparent that the staging needed a long musical interlude to cover a change of scene. Delius came up with The Walk to the Paradise Garden. It describes the couple's last happy day together, and during performances of the opera, the curtains sometimes open briefly to reveal a tender kiss. Returning now to conduct the BBC Philharmonic in that interlude, here's Jon Storgårds.